All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to American Vindicta, your favorite American angry radio station. Listen, right now, there's a lot of things going on around the world. I just want everybody to know that you need to be safe. You need to be very conscious of what you're doing while you're outside. You need to keep up situational awareness. And also, you need to be training. You need to be preparing. You need to be praying. Dashing back a little bit of cash here and there, because it looks like the economy is going to take a dump soon. And that's what the economist experts are saying. So prepare yourself. I'm not selling you anything except for the idea of self-preparedness. We've just shot down another balloon. This time it's over Alaska. The U.S. military spotted a balloon over Alaska over the past day. So within the 24 hours of me telling you this, we have shot down another Chinese balloon. Biden did give the Pentagon the go-ahead. And now the White House with John Kirby has confirmed that. Why does this keep happening? Why do we keep seeing more and more balloons? I'll tell you that in my day of being in law enforcement, we would say that criminal activity is afoot. So obviously, something is going on. Here's another one. New. Air Force Global Strike Command launched an unarmed Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile to showcase the readiness of U.S. nuclear forces. Would you say that we are stirring the pot and saber-rattling yet? How about this one? Can we say that it's now confirmed that the United States, along with some allies, possibly Norway, that we are the ones who happen to have the largest terrorist event upon the environment the world has ever seen by the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline? Seymour Hersh, a very well-known, highly awarded independent journalist, did the investigation, and from what he is saying now, that the White House obviously is denying, is that it did happen. I'm going to read you what he is saying, because I think it's worthy of you to know what this man found. So please sit along and listen to what he's got to say. This is called How America Took Out the Nord Stream Pipeline at seymourhersh.substack.com. This was published February 8th. The U.S. Navy's Diving and Salvage Center can be found in a location as obscure as its name, down what was once a country lane in rural Panama City, a now booming resort city in the southwestern panhandle of Florida, 70 miles south of Alabama border. The center's complex is a nondescript as its location, a drab concrete post-World War II structure that has the look of a vocational high school on the west side of Chicago. A coin-operated laundromat and a dance school are across what is now a four-lane road. The center has been training highly skilled deep-water divers for decades who, once assigned to American military units worldwide, are capable of technical diving to do the good using C4 explosives to clear harbors and beaches of debris and unexploded ordnance like underwater mines, as well as the bad, like blowing up foreign oil rigs, fouling intake valves for undersea power plants, destroying locks on crucial shipping canals. The Panama City Center, which boasts the second largest indoor pool in America, was the perfect place to recruit the best and most taciturn graduates of the diving school who successfully did last summer what they had been authorized to do 260 feet under the surface of the Baltic Sea. Last June, the Navy divers operating under the cover of a widely publicized midsummer NATO exercise known as Baltops 22 planted the remotely triggered explosives that, 3 months later, destroyed three of the four Nord Stream pipelines, according to a source with direct knowledge of the operational planning. Two of the pipelines, which were known collectively as Nord Stream 1, have been providing Germany and much of Western Europe with cheap Russian natural gas for more than a decade. A second pair of pipelines, called Nord Stream 2, had been built but were not yet operational. Now, with Russian troops massing on the Ukrainian border and the bloodiest war in Europe since 1945 looming, President Joe Biden saw the pipelines as a vehicle for Vladimir Putin to weaponize natural gas for his political and territorial ambitions. Asked for comment, Adrian Watson, a White House spokesperson, said in an email, "This is false and complete fiction." Tammy Thorpe, a spokesperson for the Central Intelligence Agency, similarly wrote, "This claim is completely and utterly false." Biden's decision to sabotage the pipelines came after more than 9 months of highly secret back-and-forth debate inside Washington's national security community about how to best achieve that goal. For much of that time, the issue was not whether to do the mission, but how to get it done, with no overt clue as to who was responsible. There was a vital bureaucratic reason for relying on the graduates of the center's hardcore diving school in Panama City. The divers were Navy only, and not members of America's Special Operations Command, whose covert operations must be reported to Congress and briefed in advance to the Senate and to the House leadership, the so-called Gang of Eight. The Biden administration was doing everything possible to avoid leaks as the planning took place late in 2021 and into the first months of 2022. President Biden and his foreign policy team, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, Secretary of State Tony Blinken, and Victoria Nuland, the Undersecretary of State for Policy, had been vocal and consistent in their hostility to the two pipelines, which ran side by side for 750 miles under the Baltic Sea from two different ports in northeastern Russia near the Estonian border, passing close to the Danish island of Bornholm before ending in northern Germany. The direct route, which bypassed any need to transit Ukraine, had been a boon for the German economy, which enjoyed an abundance of cheap Russian natural gas, enough to run its factories and heat its homes while enabling German distributors to sell excess gas at a profit throughout Western Europe. Action that could be traced to the administration would violate United States' promises to minimize direct conflict with Russia. Secrecy was essential. From its earliest days, Nord Stream 1 was seen by Washington and its anti-Russian NATO partners as a threat to Western dominance. The holding company behind it, Nord Stream AG, was incorporated in Switzerland in 2005 in partnership with Gazprom, a publicly traded Russian company producing enormous profits for shareholders, which is dominated by the oligarchs known to be in the thrall of Putin. Gazprom controlled 51% of the company, with four European energy firms, one in France, one in the Netherlands, and two in Germany, sharing the remaining 49% of stock and having the right to control downstream sales of the inexpensive natural gas to local distributors in Germany and in Western Europe. Gazprom's profits were shared with the Russian government, and state gas and oil revenues were estimated in some years to amount as much as 45% of Russia's annual budget. America's political fears were real. Putin would now have an additional and much-needed major source of income, and Germany and the rest of Western Europe would become addicted to low-cost natural gas supplied by Russia while diminishing European reliance on America. In fact, that's exactly what happened. Many Germans saw Nord Stream 1 as part of the deliverance of former Chancellor Willy Brandt's famed Ostpolitik theory, which would enable post-war Germany to rehabilitate itself and other European nations destroyed in World War II by, among other initiatives, utilizing cheap Russian gas to fuel a prosperous Western European market and trading economy. Nord Stream 1 was dangerous enough in the view of NATO and Washington, but Nord Stream 2, whose construction was completed in September of 2021, would, if approved by German regulators, double the amount of cheap gas that would be available to Germany and Western Europe. The second pipeline also would provide enough gas for more than 50% of Germany's annual consumption. Tensions were constantly escalating between Russia and NATO, backed by the aggressive foreign policy of the Joseph Biden administration. Opposition to Nord Stream 2 flared on the eve of the Biden inauguration in January 2021, when Senate Republicans led by Ted Cruz of Texas repeatedly raised the political threat of cheap Russian natural gas during the confirmation hearing of Blinken as Secretary of State. By then, a unified Senate had successfully passed a law that, as Cruz told Blinken, halted the pipeline in its tracks. There would be enormous political and economic pressure from the German government, then headed by Angela Merkel, to get the second pipeline online. Would Biden stand up to the Germans? Blinken said yes, but added that he had not discussed the specifics of the incoming president's views. Quote, I know this strong conviction that this is a bad idea, the Nord Stream 2, he said. I know that he would have us use every persuasive tool that we have to convince our friends and partners, including Germany, not to move forward with it, meaning not moving forward with the ending construction of Nord Stream 2. So a few months later, as the construction of the second pipeline neared completion, Biden blinked. That May, in a stunning turnaround, the administration waived sanctions against Nord Stream AG with a State Department official conceding that trying to stop the pipeline through sanctions and diplomacy had always been a long shot. Behind the scenes, administration officials reportedly urged Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, by then facing a threat of Russian invasion, not to criticize this move. There were immediate consequences. Senate Republicans led by Cruz announced an immediate blockade of all of Biden's foreign policy nominees and delayed passage of the annual defense bill for months, deep into the fall. Politico later depicted Biden's turnabout on the second Russian pipeline as the one decision, arguably more than the chaotic military withdrawal from Afghanistan, that has imperiled Biden's agenda. The administration was floundering, despite getting a reprieve on the crisis in mid-November, when Germany's energy regulator suspended approval of the second Nord Stream pipeline. Natural gas prices surged 8% within days amid growing fears in Germany and Europe that the pipeline suspension and the growing possibility of a war between Russia and Ukraine would lead to a very much unwanted cold winter. It was not clear to Washington just where Olaf Scholz, Germany's new appointed chancellor, stood. Months later, earlier, after the fall of Afghanistan, Scholz had publicly endorsed French President Emmanuel Macron's call for a more autonomous European foreign policy in a speech in Prague, clearly suggesting less reliance on Washington and its mercurial actions. Throughout all of this, Russian troops had been steadily and ominously building up on the borders of Ukraine. And by the end of December, more than 100,000 soldiers were in position to strike from Belarus and Crimea. Alarm was growing in Washington, including an assessment from Blinken that those troops' numbers could be doubled in short order. The administration's attention once again was focused on Nord Stream. As long as Europe remained dependent on the pipelines for cheap natural gas, Washington was afraid that the countries like Germany would be reluctant to supply Ukraine with the money and weapons it needed to defeat Russia. It was at this unsettled moment that Biden authorized Jake Sullivan to bring together an interagency group to come up with a plan. All options were on the table, but only one would emerge. This is the planning. In December of 2021, 2 months before the first Russian tanks rolled into Ukraine, Jake Sullivan convened a meeting of a newly formed task force, men and women from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the CIA, the State, and Treasury departments, and asked for recommendations about how to respond to Putin's impending invasion. It would be the first of a series of top-secret meetings in a secure room on a top floor of the old executive office building adjacent to the White House that was also the home of President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. There was the usual back-and-forth chatter and eventually led to a crucial preliminary question. Would the recommendation forwarded by the group to the president be reversible? Such another layer of sanctions and currency restrictions or irreversible, that is, kinetic actions, which could not be undone. What became clear to participants, according to the source, with direct knowledge of this process, is that Sullivan intended for the group to come up with a plan for the destruction of the two Nord Stream pipelines, and that he was delivering on the desires of the president. Over the next several meetings, the participants debated options for an attack. The Navy proposed using a newly commissioned submarine to assault the pipeline directly. The Air Force discussed dropping bombs with delayed fuses that could be set off remotely. The CIA argued that whatever was done, it would have to be covert. Everyone involved understood the stakes. Quote, "This is not kiddie stuff," the source said. If the attack were traceable to the United States, quote, "It is an act of war." At the time, the CIA was directed by William Burns, a mild-mannered former ambassador to Russia who had served as Deputy Secretary of State in the Obama administration. Burns quickly authorized an agency working group whose ad hoc members included, by chance, someone who was familiar with the capabilities of the Navy's deep-sea divers in Panama City. Over the next few weeks, members of the CIA's working group began to craft a plan for a covert operation that would use deep-sea divers to trigger an explosion along the pipeline. Something like this had been done before. In 1971, the American intelligence community learned from still undisclosed sources that two important units of the Russian Navy were communicating via an undersea cable buried in the Sea of Okhotsk on Russia's Far East coast. The cable linked a regional Navy command to the mainland headquarters in Vladivostok. A hand-picked team of Central Intelligence Agency and National Security Agency operatives was assembled somewhere in Washington under deep cover and worked out a plan using Navy divers, modified submarines, and a deep submarine rescue vehicle that succeeded after much trial and error in locating the Russian cable. The divers planted a sophisticated listening device on the cable that successfully intercepted the Russian traffic and recorded it on a taping system. The NSA learned that senior Russian Navy officers, convinced of the security of their communication link, chatted away with their peers without encryption. The recording device and its tape had to be replaced monthly, and the project rolled on merely for a decade, until it was compromised by a 44-year-old civilian NSA technician named Ronald Pelton, who was fluent in Russian. Pelton was betrayed by a Russian defector in 1985 and sentenced to prison. He was paid $5,000 by the Russians for his revelations about the operation, along with $35,000 for other Russian operational data he provided that was never made public. That underwater success, codenamed Ivy Bells, was innovative and risky and produced invaluable intelligence by the Russian Navy's intentions and planning. Still, the interagency group was initially skeptical of the CIA's enthusiasm for a covert deep-sea attack. There were too many unanswered questions. The waters of the Baltic Sea were heavily patrolled by the Russian Navy, and there were no oil rigs that could be used as cover for a diving operation. Would the divers have to go to Estonia, right across the border from Russia's nation, or from Russia's natural gas loading docks, to train for this mission? It would be a huge mess up. I'm not going to say this over the radio. The agency was told. Throughout all this scheming, the source said some working guys in the CIA and the State Department were saying, "Don't do this, it's stupid, and will be a political nightmare if it comes out." Nevertheless, in early 2022, the CIA working group reported back to Sullivan's interagency group, "We have a way to blow up the pipelines." What came next was stunning. On February 7th, less than 3 weeks before the seemingly inevitable Russian invasion of Ukraine, Biden met in his White House office with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who, after some wobbling, was now firmly on the American team. At the press briefing that followed, Biden defiantly said, "If Russia invades, there will no longer be a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it." 20 days earlier, Undersecretary Nuland had been delivered essentially the same message at a State Department briefing with little press coverage. Quote, "I want to be very clear to you today," she said in a response to a question. "If Russia invades Ukraine, one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward." Several of those involved in planning the pipeline mission were dismayed by what they viewed as indirect references to the attack. Here's a quote. "It was like putting an atomic bomb on the ground in Tokyo and telling the Japanese that we are going to detonate it. The plan was for the options to be executed post-invasion and not advertised publicly. Biden simply didn't get it or ignored it." Biden and Nuland's indiscretion, if that's what it is, might have frustrated some of the planners, but it also created an opportunity. According to the source, some of the senior officials of the CIA determined that blowing up the pipeline no longer could be considered a covert option because the president just announced that we knew how to do it. The plan to blow up Nord Stream 1 and 2 was suddenly downgraded from a covert operation requiring that Congress be informed to one that was deemed as a highly classified intelligence operation with military support. Under the law, the source explained, there was no longer a legal requirement to report the operation to Congress. All they had to do now is just do it, but it still had to be secret. The Russians have a superlative surveillance system in the Baltic Sea. The agency working group members had no direct contact with the White House and were eager to find out if the president meant what he said. That is, if the mission was now a go. The source recalled, "Bill Burns comes back and says, do it." So here's the operation. Norway was the perfect place to base this mission. In the past few years of East-West crisis, the U.S. military has vastly expanded its presence inside of Norway, whose western border runs 1,400 miles along the North Atlantic and merges above the Arctic Circle with Russia. The Pentagon has created high-paying jobs and contracts amid some local controversy by investing hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade and expand American Navy and Air Force facilities in Norway. The new works included, most importantly, an advanced synthetic aperture radar far up north that was capable of penetrating deep into Russia and came online just as the American intelligence community lost access to a series of long-range listening sites inside of China. a newly refurbished American submarine base, which had been under construction for years, had become operational, and more American submarines were now able to work closely with their Norwegian colleagues to monitor and spy on a major Russian nuclear redoubt 250 miles to the east on the Kola Peninsula. America has also vastly expanded a Norwegian air base in the north and delivered to the Norwegian Air Force a fleet of Boeing-built P-8 Poseidon patrol planes to bolster its long-range spying on all things Russia. In return, the Norwegian government angered liberals and some moderates in its parliament last November by passing the Supplementary Defense Cooperation Agreement, the SDCA. Under the new deal, the U.S. legal system would have jurisdiction in certain agreed areas in the north over American soldiers accused of crimes off base, as well as other Norwegian citizens accused or suspected of interfering with the work at the base. Norway was one of the original signatories of the NATO Treaty in 1949, in the early days of the Cold War. Today, the Supreme Commander of NATO is Jens Stoltenberg, a committed anti-communist who served as Norway's prime minister for 8 years before moving to his NATO post, with American backing, in 2014. He was a hardliner on all things Putin and Russia who had cooperated with the American intelligence community since the Vietnam War. He has been trusted completely since. He is the glove that fits the American hand, the source said. Back in Washington, planners knew they had to go to Norway. They hated the Russians. This is a quote. They hated the Russians, and the Norwegian Navy was full of superb sailors and divers who had generations of experience in highly profitable deep sea oil and gas exploration. That's what the source is saying. They also could be trusted to keep the mission secret. The Norwegians may have had other interests as well. The destruction of Nord Stream, if the Americans could pull it off, would allow Norway to sell vastly more of its own natural gas to Europe. Sometime in March, a few members of the team flew to Norway to meet with the Norwegian Secret Service and Navy. One of the key questions was, where exactly in the Baltic Sea was the best place to plant the explosives? Nord Stream 1 and 2, each with two sets of pipelines, were separated much of the way by little more than a mile as they made their run to the port of Greifswald in the far northeast of Germany. The Norwegian Navy was quick to find the right spot in the shallow waters of the Baltic Sea, a few miles off of Denmark's Bornholm Island. The pipelines ran more than a mile apart along the seafloor that was only 260 feet deep. That would be well within the range of the divers who, operating from a Norwegian Alta-class mine hunter, would dive with a mixture of oxygen, nitrogen, and helium streaming from their tanks and plant shaped C4 charges on the four pipelines with concrete protective covers. It would be tedious, time-consuming, and dangerous work, but the waters off Bornholm had another advantage. There were no major tidal currents, which would have made the task of diving much more difficult. After a bit of research, the Americans were all in. At this point, the Navy's obscure deep diving program in Panama City once again came into play. The deep sea schools at Panama City, whose trainees participated in Ivy Bells, are seen as an unwanted backwater by the elite graduates of the Naval Academy in Annapolis, who typically seek the glory of being assigned as a SEAL, fighter pilot, or submariner. If one must become a black shoe, that is, a member of the less desirable surface ship command, there is always at least duty on a destroyer, cruiser, or amphibious ship. The least glamorous of all is mine warfare. Its divers never appear in Hollywood movies or on the cover of popular magazines. The best divers with deep diving qualifications are a tight community, and the only very best are recruited for the operation and told to be prepared to be summoned to the CIA in Washington, says the source. The Norwegians and Americans had a location and the operatives, but there was another concern. And any unusual underwater activity in the waters off of Bornholm might draw the attention of the Swedish or Danish navies, which could report it. Denmark had also been one of the original NATO signatories and was known in the intelligence communities for its special ties to the United Kingdom. Sweden had applied for membership into NATO and had demonstrated its great skill in managing its underwater sound and magnetic sensor systems that successfully tracked Russian submarines that would occasionally show up in remote waters of the Swedish archipelago and be forced to the surface. The Norwegians joined the Americans in insisting that some senior officials in Denmark and in Sweden had to be briefed in general terms about possible diving activity in the area. In that way, some higher-up could intervene and keep a report out of the chain of command, thus insulating the pipeline operation. What they were told and what they knew were purposely different. That's what the source had said. The Norwegian embassy asked to comment on this story, but did not respond. The Norwegians were key to solving other hurdles. The Russian Navy was known to possess surveillance technology capable of spotting and triggering underwater mines. The American explosive devices needed to be camouflaged in a way that would make them appear to the Russian system as part of the natural background. Something that required adapting to the specific salinity of the water, the Norwegians had a fix. The Norwegians also had a solution to the crucial question of when the operation should take place. Every June for the past 21 years, the American Sixth Fleet, whose flagship is based in Gaeta, Italy, south of Rome, has sponsored a major NATO exercise in the Baltic Sea involving scores of Allied ships throughout the region. The current exercise, held in June, would be known as Baltic Operations 22 or BALTOPS 22. The Norwegians proposed this would be the ideal cover to plant the mines. The Americans provided one vital element. They convinced the Sixth Fleet planners to add a research and development exercise to the program. The exercise, as made public by the Navy, involved the Sixth Fleet in collaboration with the Navy's research and warfare centers. The at-sea event would be held off the coast of Bornholm Island and involved NATO teams of divers planting mines with competing teams using the latest underwater technology to find and to destroy them. It was both a useful exercise and an ingenious cover. The Panama City boys would do their thing, and the C4 explosives would be in place by the end of BALTOPS 22 with a 48-hour timer attached. All the Americans and Norwegians would be long gone by the first explosion. The days were counting down. The clock was ticking, and we were nearing mission accomplishment, said the source. And then, Washington had second thoughts. The bombs would still be planted during BALTOPS, but the White House worried that a two-day window for their detonation would be too close to end the exercise, and it would be obvious the Americans had been involved. Instead, the White House had a new request. Can the guys in the field come up with some way to blow the pipelines later on command? Some members of the planning team were angered and frustrated by the president's seeming indecision. The Panama City divers had repeatedly practiced planting the C4 pipelines or planting the C4 on pipelines as they would during BALTOPS, but now the team in Norway had to come up with a way to give Biden what he wanted, the ability to issue a successful execution order at a time of his choosing. Being tasked with an arbitrary last-minute change was something the CIA was accustomed to managing, but it also renewed the concerns some shared over the necessity and legality of the entire operation. The president's secret orders also evoked the CIA's dilemma in the Vietnam War days, when President Johnson, confronted by growing anti-Vietnam War sentiment, ordered the agency to violate its charter, which specifically barred it from operating inside America by spying on anti-war leaders to determine whether they were being controlled by communist Russia. And that operation that the CIA did was called Operation Chaos. And it was also done in conjunction with the FBI's COINTELPRO operation. Look those two up. Operation Chaos, CIA, FBI, COINTELPRO. Educate yourself. You'll be surprised. The agency ultimately acquiesced. And throughout the 1970s, it became clear just how far it had been willing to go. There were subsequent newspaper revelations in the aftermath of the Watergate scandals about the agency spying on American citizens, its involvement in the assassination of foreign leaders, and its undermining of the socialist government of Salvador Allende. Those revelations led to a dramatic series of hearings in the mid-1970s, led by Frank Church of Idaho. That made it clear that Richard Helms, the agency director at the time, accepted that he had an obligation to do what the president wanted, even if it meant violating law. So this report, it's incredibly long. We're almost here to the end of it. But there's some other things I want to get to. SeymourHirsch.substack.com. Go and read the rest of this report for yourself. He goes over historical evidence of showing how we've done things like this in the past, and that what we've done now is considered to be an act of war. For whatever reason, Russia has not seen it that way. Maybe we're just very lucky. But Russia, by all legal means, would have the reason and the want to attack America. Russia is a tit-for-tat country. All the things that we did to them with Nord Stream Pipeline, they will do to us, most likely with our own power grid. He doesn't have to attack our pipelines because we've attacked ourselves financially. But what he can attack that is going to affect all of his customers in Europe is by attacking the Noon Green Deal and by attacking our power grids. Now, I want you to consider this. What we did by attacking the Nord Stream pipeline, every death that follows from any harsh winter, that's on us as a country. That's on us. That's on Biden. And because Biden is your president, whether you voted for him or not, he's the president of the U.S., whatever actions and reactions happen will affect you. Will affect me. Now, I think the Russians understand that the average American does not care for Biden or anything like this clown show of a government. But that doesn't mean that the threat from America is not there, is not real, and that they would not use military forces to commit more sabotage and espionage attacks upon the Russian Federation again. So, preemptively, if we continue to push forward with this fight with Russia and Ukraine, Russia may actually be forced to combat us here at home. Maybe attacking some of our oil rigs offshore. We started World War III. Just know that. We did that. All you stupid Democrats and rhino Republicans out there who think Biden, for whatever reason, is a good guy, you are to blame. I'll read this last part, and then we'll move on to something else. Here's the fallout of all this nonsense. In the immediate aftermath of the pipeline bombing, the American media treated it like an unsolved mystery. Anybody else know whenever that pipeline blew up and you found out that it was Nord Stream? Anybody else go, oh, gee, I wonder why we did that? Because I did. Me and my colleagues sure as hell did. We knew we did it. The first time it was mentioned, everyone knew America did that. Russia was repeatedly cited as a likely culprit, spurred on by calculated leaks from the White House, but without ever establishing a clear motive for such an act of self-sabotage beyond simple retribution. A few months later, when it emerged that Russian authorities had been quietly getting estimates for the cost to repair the pipelines, the New York Times described the news as complicating theories about who was behind the attack. No major American newspaper dug into the earlier threats to the pipelines made by Biden and the Undersecretary State Nuland. The Undersecretary of State Nuland. While it was never clear why Russia would seek to destroy its own lucrative pipeline, a more telling rationale for the president's actions came from Secretary of State Blinken. Asked at a press conference last September about the consequences of the worsening energy crisis in Western Europe, Blinken described the moment of a potentially good one. Quote, it's a tremendous opportunity to once and for all remove the dependence on Russian energy and thus take away from Vladimir Putin the weaponization of energy as a means of advancing his imperial designs. That's very significant, and that offers tremendous strategic opportunity for the years to come. But meanwhile, we're determined to do everything we possibly can to make sure the consequences of all this are not borne by citizens in our country, or for that matter, around the world. But you did. You absolutely did. You assholes. What were you thinking? See, it's because of these secret committees, the gangs of eight, these little intelligence community gatherings that we have throughout DC. Are they doing what we the people want to be done? We the people want lower taxes, like that much lower taxes, like the size of an ant of taxes to be taken out of our money. We want to be secured financing, so that means that the government cannot just take money out of my bank account like it's doing with Bank of America right now. I want you to keep your hands off my children and off my faith, off my money, off my land, and don't even dare try and touch one of my guns. Because when you won't stop, it'll be my guns that I use to defend myself and my family and my fellow patriots and my money and my land and my cattle and my chickens and my medical situations, and all my friends that are around me, and our schools, hell, probably even possibly our country, because you idiots just walked us into another war. So what? Halliburton could get more money, like when we were fooled into going into Iraq and Afghanistan? How many of my friends had to die for these people to get more money? Oh, you know what? Yeah, hey, you know what? We'll give you a little bit of disability money here and there. Hey, man, we'll hook you up with a job. Meanwhile, tens of billions of dollars later, they're in their skyscrapers having their balls, their evening gown balls, laughing at all of us in the blood that was spilt on the sands of a burning hot desert to get rich men richer. And now they want to do it again. And now they want your kids, because the draft is coming. You're not going to escape that one. The draft is coming. They'll find a way to get us into war in Ukraine, to fight fist to fist, bullet for bullet, against the Russian Federation. And let me tell you something. We're not ready for that. For one thing, you don't have the same type of war fighters that you did back in OEF and OIF whenever I fought. We still had real men fighting then. Yeah, we were cowboys and gangsters and, you know, everything that was wrong with the Good Little Women at church. However, we went in there into Iraq and Afghanistan and got the job done the way we saw fit, not the way the politicians saw fit, because the politicians aren't the ones there fighting it. Now we have the ability to see what happened in OIF and OEF and Vietnam and the Gulf of Tonkin, and to see how many different times, like in Operation Mongoose, when the CIA and the Pentagon will lie its way into a freaking war, knowing that it's going to be the young men's blood spilt in the trenches for their advancements. These people aren't going to be out there. The Liz Cheneys, the Bidens. Hunter Biden won't be out there whenever your son gets recruited. These people will be exempt. You'll be recruited if you're probably under the age of 50. What's stopping them from taking you away from your family? What's stopping them from taking your son or your daughter away from you when they walk you into this next war? Will you stand up and fight against that, Christians of America? You patriots, you love to wave the red, white, and blue, but when this comes, where are you going to be standing? Are you going to side with the military-industrial complex and send the kids back into the meat grinder? Or are you going to stand up and say, not my son, not my daughter, and I sure as shit ain't going either? And then they'll come after you with law. And at that point in time, when the legal systems decide to get in that fight, maybe America can talk about civil war. I believe that is what's coming. I believe a great world war is coming soon. And on the heels of that will be a civil war in this country, because your monetary system is going to go kaput. Your bankings are going to fail. Every industrial leadership within the financial community is saying banks are going to fail, probably in 2023. You're going to have some sort of new pandemic. They're already waiting on it. We're already killing ourselves. We're shooting ourselves in the leg every day with these new green deals, not drilling for our own oil and natural gas, losing jobs. And as the jobs are being lost, the divorces are incurring more and more. And because of that, you have more depression, more people stuck on addictive solutions like alcohol or whatever pharmaceutical medicine is given out to them now. Or fentanyl, for God's sake, fentanyl is killing a quarter of the country. Where is the outrage in America? We were once the hammer of the world. No longer. But while you Christians lay down, you pacifists, and I think most people who listen to me know where I stand, obviously. For all you warrior priests out there, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to you pacifists. Caesar's coming back. And the rule of Rome is coming back in America. And soon, the gladiatorial games will start back up. And while America burns, there'll be the emperor fiddling while everything is going in flames. You want Caligula back? You want Nero back? They're coming. Because we don't stand up and stop the progress of that. Instead of it being a figurehead, a literal Caligula, a literal Nero, instead of it being an individual person, it's turned into a cult of personality. So now you don't have to fight just one, you have to fight tens of thousands. And many of them right now are lawmakers with a D or an R in front of their name, or they're in high ranks of the Pentagon. But I'm crazy. I'm the conspiracy theorist. I'm the enemy of the state because I tell people that the Declaration of Independence is still a living document that we need to be protecting. It's not dead and gone. That the Constitution of the United States is solid as the Ten Commandments wrote by God on stone. You can't change it. And anyone that changes, the Constitution to subvert the people of America, not to make us more free, but to put more chains onto us, is an enemy of we the people. Or have we forgotten all of this? Keep forgetting. Keep laying down. Keep being a sloth. Let these people walk all over you. And when they walk you right into the next war, they'll expect you to capitulate. Go join the troops. We'll see you on the next war front. The FBI has found a gateway to declare Christians as criminals, says a federal whistleblower. This is from Tucker Carlson. I got a few people calling me this morning about this issue. Hey, Christians, you're on the chopping block. The world doesn't care about Buddha. They don't care about Islam. They don't care about the Satanists or the agnostics. They can't stand to hear the name of Jesus, the Lord's Christ. That's why we are the enemies of the world. Because we follow the only Savior to this whole fallen empire. The FBI has found a new gateway to declare Christians as criminals, a federal whistleblower said on Tucker Carlson tonight. An internal document from the Bureau's Richmond, Virginia field office allegedly vowed to spy on radical traditionalists, Catholics, and their ideology. They found a gateway in what they think is fringe Catholicism in order to move into Christians in general and declare them to be the actual criminals in this country or the potential terrorists. That's coming from a former FBI agent, Kyle Serafin. Serafin said the documents is antithetical to Catholicism and was written by someone who believes abortion rights must be upheld and that the LGBTQ agenda has to be pushed down the American people's throats. Serafin said that the whistleblower who brought the information to him is not a Catholic, but knew it was problematic, and states, he or she stated that the very simple statement, which is that they're going to go after radical traditional Catholics, then radical traditional Baptists are next, and radical traditional evangelicalism, and anybody else that espouses essentially what is radical, which is just a Christian faith, and that it is dangerous, apparently, in this country. We are at nuclear war at any moment in the world. Your nation has decided Christians are the enemy. Patriots are the enemy. Are we veterans the enemy as well, Washington, D.C.? Because there's more of us than there is of you. SatanCon will be happening in April. Not JesusCon. Not a baptism of tens of thousands of people. Tens of thousands of people are buying tickets right now to go to Boston in April for Satan. And you'll probably see plenty of government officials there. We are going to hell in a handbasket. And just to make things a little bit funner, they set the handbasket on fire. But I will say this, that Jesus is the Lord's Christ, and the only way to the Father is through the Son. The only way to save yourself from this wretched kingdom is through the blood of Christ. And in First John chapter 2, verse 22, here I am trying to remember on the fly. Who is the liar but he who denies that Jesus is the Christ? This is the Antichrist. He who denies the Father and the Son. We have an Antichrist government. We have a half of America, even if they don't know it, support the Antichrist. The Antichrist agendas are all over the WEF and all the freakazoid LGBT whatever communities. I'll probably not be on YouTube for long with the way I speak. That's fine. Your freedom of speech is under attack. Your right to live freely is under attack. Do something about it. Stand up and do something about it. Speak out about it. Don't be like a lot of these other people who email me and say, Doug, let's formulate a plan and go and attack somebody. That is not the way. You, man, cannot save yourself. Jesus, when he comes back, takes care of all these problems. You worry about saving yourself and your family and providing for yourself and your family, which means, men, get off the stinking couch, get rid of your big fat guts, put the cigarette butt out, pour the beer out, get out on the road, start running, get to the gym, start working out, because we need you alive and healthy for what's coming. Women, that goes for you too. You ain't got no excuse in this either. And don't let your kids be a bunch of big fat slobs. Teach them to read. Make sure that they're doing their schoolwork, not playing on their phones 24/7. What it means is you need to be credible adults. You need to be ambassadors to the kingdom of God. Be a part of this world. Step away from it. Don't take part in anything that's going on. If your kids got TikTok on their phone, delete it. If you got TikTok on your phone, delete it. If you got a distraction device, some sort of app on your phone that you can't take your eyes off of it 24/7, you need to delete that garbage and get rid of it. Pick up a book. Currently, I am rereading, once again, my favorite book ever, Gates of Fire by Stephen Pressfield. I consider this a must-read for every man who declares himself to be a warrior priest. You need to read this book. Now, this is not a Christian book, but this is a historical book. And I think it puts you in the mindset of guys like me and others. And it talks about war in a very gruesome manner at times, but that is the reality of the world that you live in currently, and the world that these politicians will be recruiting you to be a part of their military. This book will help you with quite a bit. Currently, I'm actually narrating this book on my second YouTube channel. I've already had one video up on there, and I have a second YouTube channel where I do nothing but just read stories. It's called Wrecker Reads. It's not going to be for everybody. Some stories are going to be a little gruesome on there. Some stories will have a little bit of swear language or colorful language in there. But I want to try and separate myself from the politics every now and then and go back to what I like, which is storytelling. This is definitely my top book. I've read this book probably 30 times. We had to cancel the training in February. We had to cancel it. We only had 4 people sign up. I had a bunch of people interested. At one point in time, I thought we were going to have a 30-person class, and then only 4 people signed up. So the February class is canceled. It'll be held again in June, regardless of who shows up. We're going to put the class on. So here's my advice. Okay, I've been running my mouth for quite a bit. Here's my advice to you. Train, prep, and pray. If the economy is about to go down, prepare for that. Food is going to be a crisis for everybody. Prepare for that. If the power goes down, how do you get fresh water? Prepare for it. To consider generators as well. If you don't know how to use a firearm, if you don't understand self-defense, especially if you're the man of the household, prepare for it. You can email me personally, and I will have a dialogue conversation with you about it. I even put on training to be able to teach people what I know so that they can be better prepared. Wars and rumors of wars are happening right now. I don't know if it's the Ezekiel 38 wars or the Psalm 83 wars or Matthew 24 coming to life, but we got wars and rumors of wars. We got earthquakes in diverse places. My Lord, I think the death toll in Turkey and Syria is getting close to 20,000 people now. Please pray for those people. Regardless if they're your faith or not, pray for them. May God at least sustain them while all this atrocity is happening and they can rebuild. Oh, by the way, when that happened, Russia was immediately there giving aid within a matter of, you know, days. America still hasn't done it yet because, well, we're America. Train, prep, and pray. Here's some books for you. If you don't know what to do, if you're not going to prepare, if you're not going to train, I pray that you can make this through okay. Then when it hits the fan, you might want a little survival library that you can, you know, light one of your candles. Hopefully you have matches and lighters and candles. You can light a candle and you can read one of these books from Dave Canterbury. Bushcraft 101. This book goes with me everywhere I go, just in case Doug has a memory lapse and I don't know how to make a fire or shelter or harness water and purify it. Here's a book that shows you how to do it. Even has pretty pictures. Here's a book that shows you how to have first aid in the bush, which is where most of you are going to be, bushcraft self-aid. Because a lot of you want to bug out and you want to leave and flee the cities. That means you're probably not going to be around an area that has all these materials. So know what's in your backyard. Here's an advanced series for the bushcraft wilderness survival books. Here's one that I spilled iodine all over because I cut myself. Bushcraft field trapping, gathering, and cooking. Listen, guys, I am not going to be there to hold your hand. And the large amount of people that listen to me that have these skills, that have been in law enforcement, been in military, the survival guys and gals, they're not going to be there to hold your hand. Maybe you'll link up with them, God willing. But that first 72 hours, most likely you're going to be on your own. Learn to self-rescue. We say it a lot. Be prepared. That's on you. It's on you. Your spiritual life is on you. I can't pray you to salvation. You have to do that. I can't collect a whole bunch of stuff to give out to people. You have to do that for yourself. This show that I run is not a warehouse attached to, you know, endless amounts of food. I do have affiliates like my Patriot Supply who are always running specials. Always running specials. I just got a $100 check from them because apparently somebody went on my website through my affiliate program and bought food, which is, if you want to help support me and my yelling at you half the time, because I know that's what it feels like, what it is, you can go to AmericanVindictiveShow.com. The My Patriot Supply part is in there. Click on that and go through that portal, and anything that you buy, I get 10% from it. And that helps to sustain me. This show was completely ran by whatever I get from my sponsors, my VA disability, and then whatever I get from donations. So if you want to help support me, give, send, go. You can go there. at theamericanvindictusshow.com. There's also an area where you can send any type of donations or gifts or whatever. I just received an awesome gift from a couple that has a cosmetic line. And I got a bunch of, you know, really cool beard balms and shampoos and stuff like that. That's awesome. You know, we get gift cards every now and then. You know, I like to talk with people, hang out with people. I'm not a celebrity. I'm a normal person like anyone else. I'm just pissed off that our country decided to betray us all. I'm no different than any of you. We're all in the same boat together. And all of us sitting in the same boat while the people who all want to be captains are drilling holes in the boat at the same time. And it's all of us who are plugging our little fat fingers in those holes, trying not to keep the boat from sinking. America is a sinking ship. The tidal waves will eventually overcome it. Be prepared for those days. Stay strong in your faith. Keep your body fit and prepare accordingly. That's my wish for you. It's Friday, February the 10th. Go have a great weekend. Unplug from everything. Go outside and cook on the ground. Go for a hike. Go camp. Enjoy your life. Unplug from this silly crap with the news. Don't unplug from this show. Get off of YouTube. Enjoy your life. Enjoy being outside. Enjoy your family. Read your Bible. And get ready. I'll see you next week. Stay frosty. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.